The Skin Man, Part 2. She told him not to look at what was left inside, the body of his stepper, you can. And he said he wouldn't. Nor did he, but he picked up the gun and put it in his belt. The foreshot the widow woman gave him, young Bill Streeter said. He was sitting against the cell wall below the chalked map of Debaria, with his chin on his chest. He had said little, and in truth, I thought the lad had fallen asleep, and I was telling the tale only to myself. But he had been listening all along, it seemed. Outside, the rising wind of the Simoom rose to a brief shriek, then settled back to a low and steady moan. Aye, young Bill. He picked up the gun, put it in his belt on the left side, and carried it there for the next 10 years of his life. After that, he carried bigger ones, six-shooters. That was the story, and I ended it just as my mother had ended all the stories she read me when I was but a small one in my tower room. It made me sad to hear those words from my own mouth. And so it happened, once upon a bye, long before your grandfather's grandfather was born. Outside, the light was beginning to fail. I thought it would be tomorrow after all before the deputation that had gone up to the foothills would return with the salties who could sit a horse. And really, did it matter so much? For an uncomfortable thought had come to me while I was telling young Bill the story of young Tim. If I were the skin man, and if the sheriff and a bunch of deputies, not to mention a young gunslinger all the way from Gilead, came asking if I could saddle, mount, and ride, would I admit it? Not likely. Jamie and I should have seen this right away, but of course, we were still new to the lawman's way of thinking. Si? Yes, Bill. Did Tim ever become a real gunslinger? He did, didn't he? When he was 21, three men carrying hard calibers came through Tree. They were bound for Tavares and hoping to raise a posse, but Tim was the only one who would go with them. They called him the left-handed gun, for that was the way he drew. He rode with them and acquitted himself well, for he was both fearless and a dead shot. They called him Tet Fa, or friend of the Tet, but there came a day when he became Ka Tet, one of the very, very few gunslingers not from the proven line of Eld. Although, who knows, don't they say that Arthur had many sons from three wives and Moiti Moore born on the dark side of the blanket? I don't know what that means. With that, I could sympathize. Until 2 days before, I hadn't known what was meant by the long stick. Never mind, he was known first as Lefty Ross, then, after a great battle on the shores of Lake Caughan, as Tim Stoutheart. His mother finished her days in Gilead as a great lady, or so my mother said. But all these things are a tale for another day, Bill finished. That's what my Da always says when I ask for more. His face drew in on itself, and his mouth trembled at the corners as he remembered the bloody bunkhouse and the cook who had died with his apron over his face. What he said. I put my arm around his shoulders again, a thing that felt a little more natural this time. I'd made my mind up to take him back to Gilead with us if Everlyn of Serenity refused to take him in, but I thought she would not refuse. He was a good boy. Outside, the wind whined and howled. I kept an ear out for the jing-jang, but it stayed silent. The lines were surely down somewhere. Si, how long was Merlin caged as a tiger? I don't know, but a very long time, surely. What did he eat? Cuthbert would have made something up on the spot, but I was stumped. If he was shitting in a hole, he must have eaten, Bill said, and reasonably enough. If you don't eat, you can't shit. I don't know what he ate, Bill. Perhaps he had enough magic left, even as a tiger, to make his own dinner. Out of thin air, like. Yes, that's probably it. Did Tim ever reach the tower? For there are stories about that, too, aren't there? Before I could answer, Strother, the fat deputy with the rattlesnake hatband, came into the jail. When he saw me sitting with my arm around the boy, he gave a smirk. I considered wiping it off his face. It wouldn't have taken long, but forgot the idea when I heard what he had to say. Riders coming. Must be a moit. And wagons, because we can hear 'em even over the damn beastly wind. People are stepping out into the grit to see. I got up and let myself out of the cell. Can I come? Bill asked. Better that you bide here yet a while, I said, and locked him in. I won't be long. I hate it here, Si. I know, I told him. It'll be over soon enough. I hoped I was right about that. When I stepped out of the sheriff's office, the wind made me stagger and alkali grit stung my cheeks. In spite of the rising gale, both boardwalks of the high street were lined with spectators. The men had pulled their bandanas over their mouths and noses. The women were using their kerchiefs. I saw one lady, Si, wearing her bonnet backwards, which looked strange but was probably quite useful against the dust. To my left, horses began to emerge from the whitish clouds of alkali. Sheriff Peavy and Canfield of the Jefferson were in the van, with their hats yanked low and their neckcloths pulled high, so only their eyes showed. Behind them came three long flatbed wagons, open to the wind. They were painted blue, but their sides and decks were rimed white with salt. On the side of each, the words DeBarry Assault Combine had been daubed in yellow paint. On each deck sat six or eight fellows in overalls and the straw workingmen's hats, known as clobbers or clumpets, I disremember which. On one side of this caravan rode Jamie DeCurry, Kellen Fry, and Kellen's son, Vicka. On the other were Snip and Arn from the Jefferson spread, and a big fellow with a sand-colored handlebar mustache and a yellow duster to match. This turned out to be the man who served as constable in Little DeBarrya, at least when he wasn't otherwise occupied at the Faro or Watch-Me tables. None of the new arrivals looked happy, but the Salties looked least happy of all. It was easy to regard them with suspicion and dislike. I had to remind myself that only one was a monster, assuming that was the skin man hadn't slipped Arnett entirely. Most of the others had probably come of their own free will when told they could help put an end to the scourge by doing so. I stepped into the street and raised my hands over my head. Sheriff Peavy reined up in front of me, but I ignored him for the time being, looking instead at the huddled miners in the flatbed wagons. A swift count made their number 21. That was 20 more suspects than I wanted, but far fewer than I had feared. I shouted to make myself heard over the wind. You men have come to help us, and on behalf of Gilead, I say thank you. They were easier to hear because the wind was blowing toward me. Balls to your Gilead, said one. Snot-nosed brat, said another. Lick my Johnny on behalf of Gilead, said a third. I can smarten him up any time you'd like, said the man with the handlebar mustache. Say the word, young'un, for I'm constable of the shithole they come from, and that makes him my fill. Will Wegg. He put a perfunctory fist to his brow. Never in life, I said, and raised my voice again. How many of you men want a drink? That stopped their grumbling in its tracks, and they raised a cheer instead. Then climb down and line up, I shouted. By twos, if you will. I grinned at them. And if you won't, go to hell and go there thirsty. That made most of them laugh. Side this chain, Wegg said. Putting drink in these fellers ain't a good idea. But I thought it was. I motioned Kellen Fry to me and dropped two gold knucks into his hand. His eyes widened. You're the trail boss of this herd, I told him. What you've got there should buy them two whiskeys apiece if they're short shots, and that's all I want them to have. Take Canfield with you, and that one there. I pointed to one of the pokies. Is it Arn? Snip, the fellow said. T'other one's Arn. Aye, good. Snip, you at one end of the bar, Canfield at the other. Fry, you stand behind them at the door and watch their backs. I won't be taking my son into the bustin' luck, Kellen Fry said. It's a whorehole, so it is. You won't need to, so Vicka goes around back with the other pokey. I cocked my thumb at Arn. All you two fellows need to do is watch for any Salty trying to sneak out the back door. If you do, let loose a yell and then scat, because he'll probably be our man. Understand? Yep, Arn said. Come on, kid. Off we go. Maybe if I get out of this wind, I can get a smoke to stay lit. Not just yet, I said, and beckoned to the boy. "Hey, Gun Bunny," one of the miners yelled. "You gonna let us out of this wind before nightfall? I'm fucking thirsty." The others agreed. "Hold your gabber," I said. "Do that and you get to wet your throat. Run your gums at me while I'm doing my job and you'll sit out here in the back of a wagon and lick salt." That quieted them, and I bent to Vicar Fry. "You were to tell someone something while you were up there at the Salt Rocks. Did you do it?"
"Yar, I..."
His father elbowed him, almost hard enough to knock him over. The boy remembered his manners and started again, this time with a fist to his brow. "Yes, Si, do it please you." "Who did you speak to?"
"Puck DeLong. He's a boy I know from Reap Fair Day. He's just a miner's kid, but we palled around some and did the three-leg race together. His dad's foreman of the night work crew. That's what Puck says, anyways."
"And what did you tell him?"
"That it was Billy Streeter who seen the skin man in his human shape. I said how Billy hid under a pile of old tack, and that was what saved him. Puck knew who I was talking about because Billy was at Reap Fair Day, too. It was Billy who won the Goose Dash. Do you know the Goose Dash, Si Gunslinger?"
"Yes," I said. I had run it myself on more than one Reap Fair Day, and not that long ago, either. Vicar Fry swallowed hard, and his eyes filled with tears.
"Billy's da cheered like to bust his throat when Billy come in first," he whispered.
"I'm sure he did. Did this Puck DeLong put the story on its way, do you think?"
"Dunno, do I? But I would have, if it had been me."
I thought that was good enough and clapped Vicar on the shoulder. "Go on now, and if anyone tries to take it on the sneak, raise a shout, a good loud one so as to be heard over the wind." He and Arne struck off for the alley that would take them behind the Busted Luck. The Salties paid them no mind. They only had eyes for the batwing doors and thoughts for the rotgut waiting behind them. "Men," I shouted, and when they turned to me, "wet thy whistles." That brought another cheer, and they set off for the saloon, but walking, not running, and still two by two. They had been well trained. I guessed that their lives as miners were little more than slavery, and I was thankful Ka had pointed me along a different path. Although, when I look back on it, I wonder how much difference there might be between the slavery of the mine and the slavery of the gun. Perhaps one, I've always had the sky to look at, and for that I tell Gan, the man Jesus, and all the gods that may be, thank you.